Why is my voice echoing? The earth vibrates again. This is not boring. This is incredible, I say, staring at the globe. The reason we don't see all six of the guard members on the globe is because the orb only reveals the members of the guard who have their chests open at that exact moment. Watch. I lift the lid of Nine's chest. Nine whistles. Very cool, Four. Very cool. Half a second later, we hear his voice through the globe again. Nine puts his crystal down, having figured it out. But judging by the speed of this guy here, I say, pointing to the dot in motion, whoever is in South America has to be on a plane. It's covering too much ground too fast to be doing anything else. Why would they have their chest open on a plane? Nine asks. That's stupid. Maybe they're in trouble. Maybe they're hiding in the bathroom trying to figure out what all this stuff actually does, just like we are. Can they see us right now, too? I don't know. But maybe they can hear us. I think if you hold on to that red crystal, any of us with this macrocosm Earth can hear you. If half of us have a crystal, and the other half have the power to get this big glowing globe up and running, then the only way for us to actually communicate back and forth would be if a couple of us teamed up first, I interrupt. Well, now that we're together, maybe we should try to talk to the others. You know, in case their macrocosms are going, I say. Maybe another pair has gotten together like us. Nine grabs the red crystal and holds it near his mouth like a microphone. Hello? Testing, 1, 2, 3. He clears his throat. Okay, if any of you guard members are out there standing in front of a glowing ball, listen up. 4 and 9 are together, and we're ready to meet up with you. We want to train and end all this bullshit and get back to Lorien. Pronto! We're not going to say exactly where we are in case any Moogs are listening in. But if you have your macrocosm going, you'll see two dots together, and they are, us. So, Nine looks at me and shrugs his shoulders. That is all. Over and out, and stuff. The skin on my wrist suddenly feels numb under the bracelet. I shake it, and my arm begins to tingle. Wait. Say we're about to get out of here and for them to make their way to the United States. That's where Cetricus Ra, the Mogadorian leader, is. Tell them we're going after him, and we're going to rescue our friends as soon as we can. The earth in front of me buzzes to life with Nine's echoing voice. Everyone come to America ASAP. Cetricus Ra has shown his ugly face over here, and we're aiming to smash it in and take him down. Real soon. We'll send out another message tomorrow. Stay tuned. Nine drops the red crystal back into his chest, looking way too pleased with himself. Then, kind of embarrassed that he just talked into a ball. I frown. My right arm has gone ice cold, and I'm about to rip off this bracelet before putting the orbs back into the velvet bag when the earth grows fuzzy again. Then there's the sound of an explosion, followed by a voice I know well. It's the same girl I heard before, the girl Six went to Spain to seek out. She's yelling, Six, you okay? We hear a scream and two more explosions rock the fuzzy edges of the globe. I grab Nine's crystal out of his chest, frantic to try to communicate with her. Six, I yell. I would jump into the thing if I could figure out how. It's me! John, can you hear me? There's no response. We hear the faint sounds of the blades of a helicopter before the globe goes silent again and the Earth's edges grow solid. The pulsing light in India is now gone. Suddenly the globe shrinks and reforms into the 7 orbs, each of which falls to the ground. That did not sound good, Nine says, scooping up the stones. He drops them back into my chest and takes his crystal out of my frozen hand. Six is in trouble. The kind of trouble that involves explosions and helicopters and mountains. And all of this is happening now, halfway around the world. How am I going to get to India? Where can I get on a plane? Six is the chick who gave you the map to the mountain. The one who abandoned you and your boy to jet off to Spain? Nine asks. That's her, I say, kicking my chest shut, fists clenched tight. My head is swimming. What's wrong with Six? Who is the other girl? The one I've now heard twice. I notice my arm feels strange. Hearing her voice distracted me so much, I forgot about the growing discomfort there. I try to remove the bracelet from my wrist, and it burns my fingers. Something's going on with this thing. I think something may be wrong with it. Nine shuts his chest and reaches over. The bracelet? As soon as he touches it, he rips his hand away. Damn! It zapped me! Well, what do I do? I try snapping my arm out, hoping I can fling the bracelet off. Bernie Kosar trots over to smell the bracelet, but stops mid-stride and jerks his head up to stare at the front door. His ears rise, and the fur on his back bristles. Someone's here, he says. Nine and I look at each other and start to slowly back into the room, away from the door. We've been so engrossed in everything in our chests and in hearing the voice through the globe that we'd let our guard down and weren't paying attention to our surroundings. Suddenly, the door is blown off its hinges. Smoke bombs fly through the windows, sending glass shards everywhere. I want to fight, but the pain from the bracelet is now so intense I can't move. I fall to my knees. I see a flash of green light and hear Nine shout out in pain. He falls down next to me. I've seen that green light before. That is the unmistakable green light of a Mogadorian cannon.
Chapter 7. Bullets whistle by, exploding in the dirt all around us. Ella and I take cover behind the wreckage of one of the trucks. The bullets seem to be coming from everywhere, from every direction, from every angle. Ella's been hit. The air is so thick with dust from all the commotion, I can't even see her wounds. I gently run my hands over her body until I feel the wet, sticky blood and find a bullet hole in her lower thigh. When I touch it, she cries out in pain. I use the most soothing voice I can muster, given the circumstances. It's going to be okay. Marina can help you. We just need to find her. I pick Ella up and start carefully moving away from the truck, shielding her with my body. I almost trip over Marina and Creighton, who are huddled behind another piece of debris. Come on! Ella's hurt! We have to get out of here! There are too many of them. If we try to run now, they'll kill us. Let's treat Ella first, then fight back, Creighton says. I set Ella down next to Marina. She's still wearing the dark glasses. I can see her wound clearly now. Her blood is flowing steadily. Marina places her hands on Ella's leg and closes her eyes. Ella inhales sharply, her chest beginning to rise and fall at a rapid pace. It really is amazing to see Marina's legacy in action. Another explosion sounds nearby, and a blast of dust sweeps over us just as Ella's wound contracts, pushing the bullet out of her flesh. The gash turns from black and red back to the color of her pearly white skin. An outline of a small bone shifts just below the surface of her skin, and Ella's body slowly begins to relax. I rest my hand on Marina's shoulder, relieved, and say, "That was incredible, Marina." "Thanks. It was pretty cool, wasn't it?" Marina removes her hands from Ella, who slowly props herself up onto her elbows. Creighton gives her a hug. A helicopter roars overhead and decimates two trucks with a spray of bullets. A chunk of metal lands close to me. It's a piece of smoldering truck door, the red number 8 just barely visible. The sight of it fills me with anger. Now that Ella is healed, I'm ready to fight back. "Now we move on them!" I yell at Creighton. "Is it the Mogadorians?" Marina asks, clicking the lock of her chest shut. Creighton looks over the top of the debris heap we've been hiding behind and ducks back down to report. "It's not the Mogs, but there are a lot of them and they're coming closer. We can fight here, but it would be better to take it to the mountains. Whoever they are, if they aren't here to attack us, but are battling Commander Sharma, I see no reason to reveal your powers." An explosion behind us pushes another cloud of dirt our way, and I watch the helicopter circle back around and head straight for us. Marina and I look at each other, and we can tell we're both thinking the same thing. There's no way to honor Creighton's request that we not use our legacies and do what we need to do. She takes control of the helicopter and reverses its flight path. Its passengers will never understand what happened, but we know it's out of our way. And regardless of who's inside, we don't want anyone to be in danger's path unnecessarily. Ella and I cheer with relief as we watch the spinning blades disappear into the distance, while Creighton watches with a frown. Then Commander Sharma dives behind our cover. "Thank God you're alive," he says. I'm tempted to say the same thing to him. I thought he was killed when that first rocket struck. Blood trickles from a large cut on his temple, and his right arm hangs awkwardly at his side. "I'm holding you responsible for this," I say, glaring at him. He shakes his head. "Those are soldiers of the Lord's Resistance Front. They are who we were trying to avoid." "What do they want?" I ask. Commander Sharma scans the horizon before looking me in the eyes. "To kill Vishnu and destroy all of his friends. Like you. More are on their way." I move to a crouching stance and carefully peer over the demolished truck. A large brigade of heavily armed vehicles is moving towards us, several helicopters hovering above them. Tiny flashes of light appear from the long line of the trucks and jeeps, and seconds later I hear the bullets zip past us. "Let's go kick some ass," I say.
"It's not possible to defeat them here," Commander Sharma says, picking up a machine gun with his good hand. "No more than 20 of my men are still fighting. We must take it to higher ground if we want a chance to survive this."
"Just let me handle it," I say. "Wait, Six," Creighton says, scooping up Marina's chest. "He's right. The mountains will give us more cover. You can still take out every single one of them. It just won't be as visible, which is good for us. We don't need the Moogs picking up on this right now." Marina puts her hand on my arm. "Creighton is right. We need to be smart. Let's not draw more attention to ourselves than we have to."
"The Moogs?" Commander Sharma asks, confused.
"We'll need to be more careful around him." Before anyone can answer, two low-flying helicopters zip in with their guns blazing. Several of the commander's soldiers are mowed down, their weapons blown to useless shards of metal. If we're going to run, it's now or never. I use my telekinesis to pull on the tail of one of the helicopters, tipping the nose down. It looks like a rodeo horse trying to buck its rider as the pilot struggles furiously to level the copter out. We watch the pilot give a particularly hard yank to the joystick, and two men bounce right out of the cabin. They weren't very high in the air, so the fall shouldn't injure them. Much. I look over at our fleet of stalled SUVs and see smoke rising faintly from one of the tailpipes. An engine is still running. I shout, "Let's go! Now!" Everyone rushes from behind the cover. Commander Sharma yells for his few remaining men to retreat. The brigade is less than 100 yards away. As we run, I feel a bullet zip through my hair. Another one rips through my forearm, but before I can scream, Marina is right next to me, her icy hands tending to my injury as we run, All but one of the commander's soldiers follows his orders to retreat. That lone soldier follows the commander, running with us. We reach the SUV and get inside, the four of us plus Commander Sharma and the one soldier. Creighton steps on the gas and whips us onto the road. Bullets tear through the tail end of our truck, shattering the back windshield, but we're able to maneuver around a small rock formation and evade the relentless gunfire. This is not a road built for speed. It's full of potholes, rocks, and other debris, and Creighton struggles to keep us from careening off the shoulder. The SUV is overflowing with guns. I find a shotgun and crawl into the back, waiting for a target. Marina follows suit, leaving her chest with Ella. Now that I have a moment to gather my thoughts, I'm angry. We thought if Number 8 remained in the mountains, we would be safe here, under the radar. Instead, we're being attacked because of him. If we survive this, I am so going to tear 8 a new one. "Where are we going?" Creighton yells over his shoulder. "Just stay on this road," the commander says. I look over my shoulder and see the Himalayan mountains through the windshield. They are slowly getting closer, their jagged tops growing more menacing. Up ahead, the brown desert ends, and a curving band of green surrounds the base of the mountains. "Why do these guys want to kill Number 8? I ask Commander Sharma, the barrel of my shotgun bouncing off the frame of the back window.
"The Lord's Resistance Front does not believe he is Vishnu. They believe we are blasphemous, accepting this mountain boy as the supreme god. They want to kill us in his name."
"Six!" Ella yells. "Incoming!" She's still wearing the glasses. I look out the back window in time to see something fire out of the helicopter. It's a missile of some sort heading straight for us. I use my telekinesis and send it directly into the desert floor where it explodes. The helicopter fires 2 more missiles. "Time to take these dudes out," I yell. "Let's do this one together, Marina." She nods, and instead of directing the rockets into the ground this time, we loop them so they're heading directly back at the copter. We watch grimly as the helicopter explodes in a giant fireball. We never try to kill, but given a choice between killing versus being killed, I will pick us every time.
"Awesome work, Six," says Ella.
"Yippee-ki-yay and all that," I reply with a grim smile.
"Do you think they'll leave us alone now?" asks Marina.
"I don't think it's going to be that easy," says Commander Sharma.
"She has all the same type of powers as the boy you call Vishnu," says Creighton, motioning towards me.
"Will that be enough to dissuade them? Do you think they'd still try to fight him?"
"They would if they could find him," says the commander.
"How many are there in the Lord's Resistance Front?" I ask Commander Sharma.
"In total, thousands. And they have wealthy donors who support them in any way they need."
"Hence the helicopters," Creighton says.
"They have worse than that," the commander adds.
"The best plan for us is to outrun them," Creighton says to the commander. "I'll drive as fast as I can. If we have to fight, we'll fight. But I'd like to avoid it."
5 minutes pass in tense silence. Marina and I monitor the brigade in the distance, and whenever we pass something large enough, we use our telekinesis to drop it in the path behind us. The tall trees that have begun to dot the sides of the road quickly form a thick line of defense. The car dips into an extremely narrow valley before beginning to ascend the mountain. We have just come to the base, when Commander Sharma tells Creighton to stop. I lean forward in my seat and see dozens of small mounds in the dirt.
"Landmines?" I ask.
"I'm not sure," the commander says, "but they weren't there 2 days ago."
"Is there another route to wherever we're going?" Creighton asks.
"No, this is the only path," Commander Sharma says.
Suddenly, we hear the sound of helicopter blades, but I don't see them yet. They're hidden behind the tall trees. Of course, that means they can't see us either,
though it sounds like they aren't very far off anymore.